And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We are your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Mark, spring has sprung, and so have we.
We certainly have. I noticed a little bit of more of a spring in your step.
Yes, AOC, An Organic Conversation, is now on 4 stations throughout the nation.
Yeah.
Good job.
Growing.
And growing, yes. With the spring. Where are we? We are in Urbana.
Urbana, Illinois. We're in Sonoma on my old station, Sun FM, up there. And then
Sun Rays. Sun FM, how appropriate.
Yes.
For today's show. Yeah. And yes, KWMR in Point Reyes Station. And of course, Green 960, both green960.com nationally online, as well as Green 960 in the wider Bay Area in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Good job. And if you would like us to be at your community radio station, you can send us an email to share@anorganicconversation.com. share@anorganicconversation.com. And then we will follow up if you give us the station ID and maybe a contact if you have somebody. We are happy to give the show to whatever local station that would like to air it.
Yeah, I'm in conversation with some shows in the Berkshires back east and up in...
the Shire.
Berkshire. Up in Blue Hill, Maine, and Tucson, Arizona. So there's some other places, that you might be seeing us pretty soon.
Cool. Soon in the Shire. And also, it's Earth Day, Mark.
Coming up.
Yes, April 22nd, this Friday. Friday this week. April 22nd, which actually started all the way back. I wasn't sure when it started. I didn't know the full history. Mm-hmm. It started all the way in the 70s, actually. The first Earth Day was on April 22nd, 1970.
You were born then, weren't you?
Just about.
Yeah, just.
Thanks. Yeah.
Well, I remember it. I remember it vividly. It was actually part of that whole awakening for me.
You were just out of college?
Yeah. It was my 50th birthday.
Yeah, I know. But you remember at least still. That's great.
No, I was actually 14, and that actually was part of the environmental awakening for me. I mean, all the magazines that we would get in our house were coming through with, you know, front page things around the environment and nuclear power and oil spills and the environment, and Senator Gaylord Nelson was a strong advocate for getting Earth Day going, and John F. Kennedy too talked a lot about Earth stewardship.
Yes, and all the things came together. Vietnam War, a total absence of any discussion, political discussion on any environmental crises at that time, early 60s into the late 60s, and Senator Gaylord Nelson finally announced that in the fall of 69, that there will be a celebration, a national observance of environmental issues on April 22nd, sometime in spring of 1970, which then became April 22nd. From then on, always Earth Day each year. And it's interesting how that has shifted from an observance of the challenges and the problems that we have in the environment to now truly a celebration about life. Mm-hmm. And the earth and the beauty of it. And we talk about that a lot, about what you focus on will grow. We talk about that here on the show. And Caroline Casey, our guest a couple times already, has made a really big point about that, saying that whatever your language is important, if not critical. No, see, now I'm doing it too. Language has the beautiful power to, direct our intention and direct our attention. And so, from the early day Earth Day celebrations of focusing on what was in dire and needed, what's in crisis and needed our attention, to now celebrating the life-giving forces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very, very beautiful.
Yeah, I remember when I was in the nuclear freeze movement and canvassing for Greenpeace, and a lot of the early days of the organic movement. It was all that I was against something more so than I was for something.
Yeah, almost entirely, right? I remember that too. You were against nuclear power. We were against, right, and not for alternative energies, for organic food, for, yes, putting energy into the life-giving forces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So true. So Earth Day, happy birthday, Earth. And in a way, every day is Earth Day. So even though we are really making a concerted effort, I think they're expecting 22 million people being involved in 70 countries around the world. So it has by far, got beyond the U.S. borders. But we need to keep her, of course, in our hearts every day. Every day is Earth Day,
mm-hmm.
especially on April 22nd. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are so excited about our guests today. Lots of them, a filmmaker, a beekeeper, and millions of bees. More on that when we come back right after the break.
Red roses too, I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about an amazing, amazing new movie that is just now coming to a theater near you, so we hope. It's called Queen of the Sun, and it's about honeybees. With us in the studio is Taggart Siegel, independent filmmaker and the director of Queen of the Sun. Taggart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
It's such an honor and pleasure to have you, truly.
Thank you.
You call yourself an independent filmmaker, and I would challenge that and say, aren't you an interdependent filmmaker?
That I've never heard that phrase for a filmmaker, but I think that's aptly, I think that is a really good term for it.
Mark and I sat in the movie theater in Mill Valley, California, in Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate a few months ago, and it was one of the most moving documentaries I've seen in a long while. Really, we sometimes use the term life-changing, maybe a little bit too easily. I do. Just so impressed with what's going on. But it was so touching, mm-hmm. and moving, a very beautiful movie. Before we get into that, though, you have a history as a filmmaker, and we want to talk about your background of how you came to this movie before we dive in. In the agricultural scene, you are the most known for the hilarious and also moving and very important and sincere and serious, actually, movie The Real Dirt on Farmer John. Mm. Tell us more about your background as a filmmaker and how what projects you were involved in, and why did you pick agriculture with The Real Dirt on Farmer John, and now what has led you to bees?
Well, The Real Dirt on Farmer John comes out of my relationship with Farmer John, which goes back to the early 80s when he had this commune farm and I was the college student artist that came and lived on his farm, and I made films there, I painted there, and it was this glorious eye-opening experience to live on a farm. He had cows and chickens and pigs. And he was also a farmer that wanted to celebrate agriculture. Not
the culture and agriculture.
Culture of agriculture. And so he had events all the time that celebrated agriculture. And we went into the cornfield and created an equinox celebration and ceremony. But out of that, I started making a film, and he starred in them. So this was back in early 80s. But tragically, I didn't know he was actually about to lose his farm. So in 82... he went under, and that was my first documentary called Bitter Harvest about Farmer John losing his family farm after...
In the Midwest somewhere.
In the Midwest in Illinois after 100 years or more. being on this family farm. People, you know, he moved his family's from Norway originally. And here I am making this 8-minute documentary or 10-minute documentary that turns up in The Real Dirt on Farmer John, you know, in 2006. So my life as a filmmaker, I often go back to subjects that move me and inspire me. And so Farmer John, his life legacy as a maverick farmer who transforms his family farm, loses it, completely loses it, and then he resurrects the family farm and creates Angelic Organics. And now it's one of the most thriving CSA farms.
Yeah, community-supported agriculture, where you get a box, one of the largest box programs directly from the farm to the table that we have in the country. So when you started as a filmmaker, you were basically just capturing a moment in time without knowing that this will be a full-featured film.
I had no idea back then.
Yeah.
And in fact, in the 80s, all the farms were going down. All the family, little farms with the cows and the chickens and the pigs, the old McDonald farms, were starting to unravel. He was one of the first, but his whole community was shattered. And so this film kind of captures the unraveling of into agro industry or factory farming. It later turned into factory farming. But Farmer John's turned back into organic, and not only organic, but biodynamic, which is, I think,
an important theme that you took into the B movie that we want to talk about too.
And that we had a show on about 2 months ago.
Yes, biodynamic agriculture. So you have been an award-winning, Emmy-nominated filmmaker for 25 years. What has brought you to capturing bees?
Well, the bee thing really came out of The Real Dirt on Farmer John, learning a lot about Rudolf Steiner and his teachings about biodynamic farming, and also about the appreciation of a farm as an organism, that everything's interconnected, and that it's not just about organics, you know, to eat healthy. It's about supporting all of life, and which is really exciting to me. And suddenly, everything seemed to be about, let's support all the microorganisms. Suddenly, the soil started seeming different to me. It started seeming alive and exciting. Although soil that is not supported that way is often dead, and it's synthetic, and it's fake. And so I had this great appreciation of biodynamic farming. Now, when it comes to bees, I had no idea that bees were so crucial until I read an environmental magazine, and there's a quote from Einstein that said, if bees die out, man has 4 years to live. Now, he didn't necessarily say it, but that quote is everywhere. But it frightened me so much to wake up that this little insect is one of the most important things that's keeping us alive, and they're dying out. So it was kind of like one of these big awakenings, almost epiphany for me. That's my next film.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are in conversation with Taggart Siegel, the filmmaker of Queen of the Sun. And, of course, a shout out to Rudolf Steiner. His birthday is this year. He turned 150 in February. Mm-hmm. Mark.
So you were led to bees. So what's the movie about?
The movie is a celebration of bees, like giving them a chance to almost speak in a way that so we could understand them through a lens of understanding that they are a magnificent, magical species that not only keeps us alive, but they are always in service. They are always giving back to nature 100%. And they give back to their hive. So they live in a community that is totally interdependent. And one bee living outside the hive will die within 24 hours. Even if you gave it enough food or warmth, that bee would die out. So I started seeing this hive as something that is a great metaphor for us, where the ego is no longer in place. They are they've actually renounced their sexuality, the female, to serve the queen. But in reality, they're serving the whole. And so that was a really inspiring thing to see, that 90% of all is all produced within the hive. They make their own wax. Comes out of the abdomen of their body, which is really an amazing thing. And the bee behind that bee will collect that wax, and then they'll create that hexagonal shape form, which is so powerful. And you could go on and on. And then suddenly the nectar, they turn it into, you know, they digest it into their stomach, and the enzymes in their stomach creates this miraculous thing called honey. And then they cap that with wax. And it's just, it goes on and on and on. And then it's what? Preserved for thousands of years. It never goes bad.
Yes. So what was striking the most for me sitting in the movie theater is both the cinematography, the images are just breathtakingly gorgeous. And I want to know how difficult it was to film an insect. It's not easy. And yet... Bees are stationary, right? They come back to that hive.
Yes.
But what, you know, from filming the real dirt on Farmer John, humans and vegetables that don't run away, to a flying insect, what challenges did that bring to you as a filmmaker? Did you spend the first year observing only, or did you just hold down the camera? Were you protected? Like, how do you film bees?
Well, when I'm with the beekeeper, normally a biodynamic or organic beekeeper, they hardly ever wear suits. So they have a relationship with bees that's very different. So if they're not wearing a bee suit, I'm not going to either. I'm going to trust that I'm not going to get stung. So you have to kind of get into this state of calmness, of peace almost, and be with the bees. Now, if the beekeeper wears a suit, I'm going to wear a suit. There's this like trust thing that's not there. And for me to go into filming bees was extremely difficult, in the sense that you have to have so much patience. A bee stays on each flower for just a few seconds, and off to the next flower, and off to the next flower. And that's actually what's keeping us all alive, by pollinating, and you know, each flower as they go along. So right when I have that perfect shot, the bee has flown to the next flower.
But so, they knew you were filming, so they worked with you, right, as best as they could.
They did, and it was beautiful. And had to get so close so you could see their eyes, so you really feel connected with bees. That was the biggest challenge. Like, give an audience a chance to be with a bee, which is, they're extraordinary. But most people won't necessarily think a bee is extraordinary until they build that relationship.
Yes, and we want to hear about how extraordinary they are, because I took some notes during the movie. It's from the food, honey as food, to the species being, what, 150 million years old, you're saying in the movie, and just the notion that if there are no bees, there will be no food, right? That every 10th bite we take throughout the day directly comes from a bee in one way or another, or wouldn't be there if we didn't have bees. So you arranged a call-in, another guest, a beekeeper that actually has an entire bee sanctuary, and we will get into that much, much more when we come back right after the break. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And you're listening to An Organic Conversation. Stay tuned.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about an amazing new movie that is just now coming to a theater near you called Queen of the Sun. It's about honeybees. And with us in the studio is Taggart Siegel, the independent filmmaker and the director of Queen of the Sun. And also now on the phone with us, joining us from Healdsburg, California, from the Melissa Garden, melissagarden.com, Michael Thule. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
Michael, you're German, yes?
Yes, I am.
So I can't pronounce your word. It's your name, it's Michael, but we'll stay with Michael.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes.
No, you're doing great. Don't worry about it.
Great.
So what can you tell us, what is a bee sanctuary, and why was a bee sanctuary created?
Well, maybe I'll start with the last question.
Sure.
There were three concerned beekeepers, and we all got together and we realized that we all had one thing in common, which was this urge of wanting to protect the honeybee. And, you know, looking at what is all happening to the honeybees all over the world, we felt like this is a creature which needs special protection, and therefore we decided to dedicate this piece of land, those 40 acres, towards a honeybee sanctuary. And what we do is, in a nutshell, what we do is we try and provide as much as we can for a natural environment for this animal, for this being. And we try to do that on all levels. Beginning with plantings, we plant as many flowers as we can, and also they are staggered, so we have blossoming happening throughout the entire season. And then we work with very special hives, different hives. And then, of course, the beekeeping aspect is very different too. We felt like, to some extent, we had to put things upside down in order to come back to a more bee-centered approach.
And so 40 acres, a 40-acre ranch in Healdsburg with lush vegetation.
Yes.
You are saying on your website there are 1,700 species of native bees in California. And you are part of the movie, Queen of the Sun. You are featured in the movie with your bee sanctuary, beautiful Eden-like place. What's your background? How did bees find you?
You know, that's an interesting question. Many years ago, I was not yet living with bees, and then I started dreaming about bees. And then I talked to a friend who's a beekeeper, and asked him whether he would give me an empty bee box to start with, because I didn't have any equipment and nothing. And at that time, I lived in a very small house across a pond surrounded by wild land. And I had that bee box behind my house, and all of a sudden, people were calling me, and there was a swarm circumambulating my little cottage, because I had closed that box completely, except with one little entrance hole, which was about the size of a bee. So they were all trying to swarm in that used empty box, and then I ran to the house and just pushed the top lid a little bit to the side, and it was like the genie going back into the bottle. And there it was, my first bee colony.
Unplanned.
Those dreams came true.
Yes, those dreams came true.
And so what have the bees taught you?
I would say the bees changed my life completely on all levels. They are such an inspiration. They're such an inspiring teacher when it comes to living on Earth and living with each other, you know, looking at how communal life is within a bee colony. And also the kind of sense of self each individual bee has. When you look at how the life of a bee is so much about service and dedicating one's life really towards the whole, the community, giving everything one can for the benefit, for the greater benefit of the earth. That's so inspiring. And I think many beekeepers feel attracted to that wisdom. We can call it wisdom. And living with those creatures just rubs on you, and it also encourages to ask questions about my beliefs of what life truly is. And also living with bees gives the opportunity to see how fragile really our life is, and how we all are so closely interconnected. And there's this beautiful quote I just stumbled over by E.O. Wilson, this entomologist. He said something beautiful about bees. He said, "The bees are the heart of our biosphere." And I thought it was so beautiful, the way he put it. Mm-hmm. So not only can bees really be quite inspiring for all our deep life questions, but they can also show us how fragile their life is, and particular now, and how important it is to have them.
We're speaking with Michael Thule from Melissa Gardens. The website is themelissagarden.com, a honeybee sanctuary in Healdsburg, California, and one of the featured people with his bees on the new movie Queen of the Sun. Michael, when people talk about bees, you hear that term superorganism a lot. And can you explain exactly what that is? Is it about the way a beehive is functioning? Like what is the different roles of the different bees, and some are just making sure that the temperature is right? What's your definition, or what are the parts of the elements of a superorganism?
Yeah, that's a beautiful question. And that's also something really fascinating to look at. So we have within the whole range of forms, we have the single cellular beings, and then the multicellular beings, and then we have the third, which is the superorganism. So a superorganism is something, an entity, which goes beyond the single, which goes beyond single units, single, multi-singular beings. In other words, a single bee cannot survive by herself. In other words, that organism, that animal, consists out of many, many elements, which and each is a bee. And all those up to 50,000 single individual bees make up one organism. We could almost consider the individual single bees as the cells, the individual cells of that one being. So the superorganism goes beyond the individual single animal, and the multitude of all the bees constitute a new level of being. And
which is completely remarkable, because we are, when we talk about entities, we usually have a physical connection. That physical connection between the bees does not exist. They are independent insects in the sense of, you know, being able to fly alone without the help of another bee, and yet they only exist in community.
That is so true, yes. It's almost as if we could imagine, you know, it's like our body. We are multicellular, but then we have like the liver and other organs. And in the case of the superorganism, those parts of the superorganism can leave the boundaries of that superorganism,
yes,
and go and forage for nectar and pollen and then return. It's quite fascinating.
Yes, I want to bring Taggart in. And Taggart, there are so many superlatives when it comes to bees. I remember there was the oldest food that has ever been found. What was it? Thousands of years old? That was still edible. Was honey, right?
Mm.
Is that correct?
Many of the Egyptian tombs have honey in the tombs, and it's still edible. So
thousands, 8,000 years old.
Yeah, and so what food is there that actually doesn't decay or break down? And that's the miracle of honey, too, is that it's microbial and it's antibiotic, antibacterial, and it's such a high in enzymes and all the beautiful things that are really good for us. But it's a miracle food. Like, why doesn't it break down? It's amazing. So bees have created this thing that really is so beneficial to the world and also mankind.
And then, Michael, I think it was you who said, bees being one of the oldest species ever, just as, you know, older than even sharks, 150 million years old, dating back, and beeswax is actually captured light. Was that you, Michael?
I think that it was Johannes Wurz in the movie who was talking about the sunlight,
yes,
being gathered. And actually, the foraging bees returning with nectar and pollen, they know the sunlight, but then the ones who are then transforming nectar and pollen into wax are those very, very young bees who have never seen the outside yet, because they only leave the hive once they are maybe 3 to 4 weeks old. So those very young bees, they start building wax using nectar and pollen and making this beautiful white wax out of their own body. And then Johannes, I believe, he said that, and then we render those wax comb back into beeswax candles and burn it, and there is light again.
Yes, it's captured sunlight, and then we release that sunlight again in the forms of a beeswax candle.
Yes.
So beautiful. Michael, we're taking a quick break. Please stay on the phone. We have one more question for you when we come back. Michael Thule, the founder of Melissa Gardens, themelissagarden.com, a honeybee sanctuary in Healdsburg, California, and one of the honeybee keepers in the new movie by Taggart Siegel called Queen of the Sun, one of the most moving documentaries I've seen in a long time. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. We'll be right back after the break.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about a new movie, an amazing new documentary that is just now coming to theaters throughout the United States called Queen of the Sun. And it's about honeybees. With us in the studio still is Tagat Siegel, independent filmmaker and to the director of Queen of the Sun. And also on the phone, we are joined by Michael Thule, the founder of Melissa Gardens, a honeybee sanctuary in Healdsburg, California. And Michael, you are also a teacher, or you're teaching honeybee keeping. Great website, themelissagarden.com, where you, I believe you have classes and events, hold schedule of upcoming classes. But diving into it.
I had a question. I was wondering, what can we do? What can anybody who has any type of yard space or any type of access to the outdoors available to them, what can we do to create a better space for bees in our lives?
And if we have honeybees, if people who are listening to the show, you know, are lovers of honeybees, what's the one thing that you remember or know of that is so often overlooked that would make it so much more comfortable for the bees in the backyard?
Yeah, good question. Very important. We can be beekeepers in very different ways. Even without being a beekeeper, we can actually work with the bees by planting flowers and to provide forage for them, not only for honeybees, but also for all kind of pollinators. So very important. And I believe in Queen of the Sun, at the end, it also lists a few things what we can do to support them, which is not only lawns, but, you know, have many different flowers in your garden and stagger them in a way that blossoming is happening throughout
the season,
most
the year.
Of the season. Mm-hmm. And also buy from local beekeepers your products, honey and pollen. Support locals, because those are the ones who are the stewards of the bees.
So can you explore that just for a minute? If you go to a natural food store, there's honey that is, you know, $25 or $30 for a good sized jar, and there's honey for $8. Why that extreme of a price difference? What's determining the quality of honey?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it's probably has to do with the size of the outfit which sells the honey. There are many, many issues with punched honey. You may end up with buying honey or something in a honey jar, which is actually not honey. And it's very difficult to find out whether or not it's truly honey.
Taggart, you had a comment. Comment to that. Michael, hold on a sec. Taggart was chiming in.
Yeah. I was just going to say that it's interesting. I lived in New Zealand. I live in New Zealand part of the year. And Manuka honey is a very, very popular honey. And it's probably one of the greatest honeys on earth for medicinal qualities and also healing burns if you got cut or burned. It's right. One of the things that heals tremendously. Now, this honey used to be just fed to the animals, to the livestock, which is a great thing to do during the Maori in New Zealand. They would just feed it because it's very thick and goopy and it's hard to turn into really good sellable honey. But they realized the medicinal properties of this and they've advertised it in a very big way. And suddenly it's instead of $5 a bottle, it's now 30 or 40. The demand went up. Mm. Now, that's one honey that's really good because it's actually tea tree. It's has a lot of, it's from the tea tree. But there are many other honeys that have not been really explored for their medicinal properties, and therefore the demand isn't as high. So in some ways it could be supply and demand.
Great, thank you. And Michael, what is punched honey? You said it's punched? No.
Yeah, you know, I just read it. It happens again and again. I just read it 2 weeks ago. They again found, I don't know how many thousands of pounds of honey somewhere in a big warehouse, and it was declared as honey, but it was actually not honey. And it came, most of the times these days, it comes from China, and then via Taiwan or something. And punched honey is, maybe there's a trace of honey in there, but most like the majority of it is high fructose corn syrup or sugar, you know. And
you
also,
can't tell in the consistency or in the color or in the...
No, not by the visuals for sure, and not even by taste probably, unless you are really a beekeeper and then you know maybe. But it's very they're very intelligent, and I guess there are not so many resources in catching that, you know. There are not many funds maybe to test and sample and make sure it's really honey coming in. But also that leads me to this other issue, which is that honey was actually a sacred substance, or like Taggart said, it was medicine, and it was treated like that. So when you look into indigenous cultures, you'll see in many of them, honey was not even sold because it was sacred, it was medicine. And now with once commodity thinking came in, we started into increasing quantity, and the whole way bees are kept changed dramatically at that point where we wanted more quantity, and it was all of a sudden a commodity. And that's also the beginning where the bees started suffering from our interventions. And now conventional beekeeping is just tailored with that intention to maximize the so-called honey crop. And that's the main focus. And we lost the bees. We lost the health.
Yes, and there's a great part in the movie Queen of the Sun where Taggart, you're talking about and you're showing, you know, the consequences of industrialized agriculture beyond the direct environmental impact, but as it relates to bees, who I'm not even sure if those are considered honeybees or purchased pollinators, where literally tens of thousands of millions of bees are being brought to massive orchards over hundreds and hundreds of acres. I think it's the almond orchard in this case, the big almond orchard. So the issues of transporting bees thousands of miles, hundreds of miles, if not thousands of miles, to put them in an orchard, to pollinate them, getting paid for that, and then shipping them another 1,000 miles somewhere else to pollinate. What is happening to the bees, Michael, in that moment? Because it's usually a fairly stationary insect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like a tree almost. It just sits there. And if you move a beehive just 2 feet, you'll see they come back to the original place, and then it takes them a while to find the new entrance. So
even only 2 feet.
Yeah, and normally you say you move a hive either 3 feet or 3 miles. If you move a hive 50 feet away from its original location, they will not find home again. So,
and so what's happening in non-organic agriculture, if you just for a minute, literally tens of thousands of bees are being shipped zip-zap criss and cross the United States simply for pollinating purposes, yes?
Yeah. Well, on all levels of the bee's health, we have mega stress imposed. Bees are shipped across the country, but also globally across seasons. So, when the almond starts to bloom, the U.S. is importing bees from Australia. And in Australia, it's fall. And that being is a seasonal being. So it's right now preparing for winter.
Right.
And then it's taken out of that season and placed into early California spring. And it's just tremendous. And then the way they are very sensitive. When you work with them, you'll see their entire life is about scent. They smell the world. And also they're very sensitive to vibration. And then you see it in the movie, in Tiger's film, how forklifts and semis are used to transport them. And then the language. Then millions of bees are parked. Literally, that's the word used. They're parked somewhere in between, and millions are dying just in so-called parking places. Yeah, and I just the other day, not far away from the Melissa Garden, there was a commercial outfit, and they had parked 50 hives next to each other for about 3 months. And then when the almonds just started now in February to bloom, they picked them up. And as a beekeeper, you know that bees, if you want to move them, you have to wait till everybody is home, which means when it's dark or dusk. So, but they came at 5 in the afternoon, and there were still thousands of bees flying. And they moved them all away, and probably 100,000, 200,000 bees behind. And at night, it was still freezing, and they all froze to death.
Yes, so buy from your local beekeeper. So important. Make a connection. Somebody in your neighborhood might be a beekeeper, or there might be, a local outfit, local organic outfit nearby. Even more important now, hearing that story. Michael, thank you so much for your work, for being part of the movie, and I'm sure it must be exciting for you to see it now hit main theaters all throughout the country. The response has been phenomenal.
Yes, I think it's a very, very important movie, a very important film, and it touches people and it brings bees back into the media, and I believe that we need bees for our own survival. And that regards, we needed that movie.
Michael Thule, the founder of Melissa Garden, themelissagarden.com, a honeybee sanctuary in Healdsburg, California. Thanks, Michael, for being part of the show.
Appreciate Thank you, Helga. Thanks, Taggart. Bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Taggart, the movie is done. It's coming to theaters everywhere. The response has been wonderful. Yes?
Yes, it's been great. And we opened actually for a test screening in Portland, Oregon in September, and it played for 7 weeks. And the only reason they took it out was because there were so many other films that they thought they were going to be playing. They didn't, because every night there were 50 to 100 to 150 people. And it's one of these films that I think really is a community film. It's a word of mouth. It's grassroots. It's like it catches fire, because I do think people care about this really crucial issue. It's not about me as a filmmaker. It's really about helping save us, on this planet, and it's also helping save honeybees.
And so you have some openings coming up, right?
Yes, we're excited. We've opened already in San Francisco, which is going great. We're on Earth Day. We're going to be opening back in Portland again, in Salem, in Eugene, in Madison after that, in Chicago, in Santa Fe, and it goes on and on. You could visit our website at queenofthesun.com mm-hmm. and go to the screening page. But, you know, we've booked over 50, 60 theaters.
Yeah, truly throughout the U.S., from New York, Michigan, Ann Arbor, Hartford, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Phoenixville, Lincoln, Nebraska. Good for you.
Thank you. The bee, it's for the bees. It really is. It's so great to be doing something that actually feels really good. Like it's not about getting ahead.
Yes. And the kind of the notion of the movie, Mark and I walking out of it, you're saying that actually, I think specifically, you're saying the task of our lifetime is to find home.
Mm.
Do you remember that? I didn't say that. You said that. Or maybe I just wrote it down. I took that away from the movie when I saw it.
And maybe through the question and answer period or something like that.
It could have been through question and answer,
yeah,
but
I think you said
it is all about home. I mean, if you really come down to it, the bees are forming a home and humans help them find a home. And so we have this great relationship of helping them find a home. But if you also look at what the queen bee does, she's extraordinary. Like when she gets older, she takes half the hive and goes in swarms, leaving the new queen to live in the old house. Like here, it's like
you get kicked out and you have to fetch for yourself, right?
Actually, it's the, you know, the father, the mother giving her offspring the house and saying, okay, I'm yes. going now. I'm going to go to the unknown. And that's what a swarm is.
Opposite from humans.
Yes. And so she's off with her half the hive finding a new home. And that's where humans come into play too. It's like, oh yeah, we would love to have that swarm in a beehive. And that's where backyard beekeepers come in
of course,
rooftop beekeepers.
Beautiful.
Well, the whole movie is a metaphor. When
totally.
When we were just listening, I remember in the movie when it was being, they were talking about moving the bees and, you know, bringing bees from Austria, when it's their
Australia.
Fall.
Australia.
Yeah, yeah. When it's their fall and our spring. And if something doesn't rest and always works, then there's a consequence to
that's
that.
Right. Exhaust,
and if you think about the bees as a sunbeam, it's totally a sunbeam. They get their bearings from the sun where they're located. So if you move them, they're getting disorientated in multiple ways, and it's not natural. It's not natural for us to probably be flying around the world too. But for a bee, it's really not natural. And so we truck them around the country, and suddenly they're in new environments, and they're fed monoculture plants.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with Mark more. Even directly, I felt like, and after watching your movie, I felt that the bees are our nervous system in a way. And when that is disturbed, we will be disturbed, and we are disturbed.
Well, Michael Pollan, who's in the film, beautifully says that our taste and the bees' taste is almost identical. What they like, we like. Their smells. And as he says, it's not like that for the fly. The fly likes things that smell really
decaying,
bad.
Yes.
Decaying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And their body temperature is very similar to ours. In ways, this superorganism is a very intelligent being. And we may not think bees are that intelligent, you know, when we look at them, but they are super intelligent. And that's from looking at it from our lens, you know, from humans' lens, instead of looking at what they're contributing to community and for the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you were saying earlier, every you know, eighth or tenth bite that we ingest is made possible through the generous contribution of bees, really.
Yeah, Michael Pollan says every fourth
bite
is contributed to bees. But if you think about ecosystems, forests out there, let's say in New Zealand, they would disappear, those forests, if it wasn't for the pollinator. So it's about our food, but it's also about our ecosystems. Mm-hmm. So if we just look at it
sure,
at food,
always.
Yeah.
Yes. What about the silica? It's something I remember too, maybe as a last point, because it was so interesting that it's silica is half of the Earth's mantle. You find it in the soil as a layer, and it's also as the only other place in the sensing organ of the bee. Can you expand on that?
Well, that's what's remarkable, and Rudolf Steiner talks about silica, and so does Günter Hawk, the beekeeper in the film. It's beautiful when you start looking at what the bee brings in from chamomile or from vegetation. They actually bring in the silica forces, and they put that from the nectar into their stomach, and they turn that into honey. So when you eat honey, you actually are getting the silica forces of the earth, which helps our sense perception. So we need silica to live. If you look up silica, it's amazing what you find out about it. Same as formic acid. Formic acid, E.O. Wilson, the great biologist, talks about how ants and wasps and hornets and bees give up formic acid. It's one of the crucial things for life to take forth. And every time a bee visits a flower, it is releasing a little bit of formic acid, which brings life to whatever we see today.
Taggart Siegel, the director of Queen of the Sun and the filmmaker of this amazing documentary. Taggart, just as a wrap-up, we're almost out of time, but how has making this movie influenced your life for the last, what, two, 3 years that you spent making it, working with bees every day in one way or another?
It's the greatest joy I've ever had making a film. I wake up and I feel like I'm doing service for the bees, but also for making, allowing people to realize how beautiful and wonderful this bee is, the bees are. So I feel like it's changed my life, especially meeting all these incredible beekeepers around the world. You know, you don't meet beekeepers. You don't meet people that are tickling their bees with their mustache, which we have in the film, or Sarah Marpelli, who's dancing with 12,000 bees on her body.
How did that come about?
Well, that was my first film shoot, so I didn't know about bees then. So it was kind
of
like...
Welcome to the world of wonder.
She had done some sort of ceremony, and suddenly bees were inside her, she said, and she wanted to do dance with bees on her body. So she...
placed the queen bee on her chest.
Bee around her neck, and all the bees gathered on her chest like an armor or a suit, and she danced for an hour and a half.
Or like a real skin.
Yeah. And it was a moving organism, just like these little thick bees crawling all over her body. Now, some people would say that's weird, but she sees it as a meditation and respect for bees. So I love how everybody has a different perspective on bees.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it couldn't be more true. It's the chemical, the physical, the metaphorical, everything comes together. And as we said a few minutes ago, it's really about finding your home. It's hard not to be affected by it in one way or another. An amazing new documentary. Yes.
Well, I just wanted to say I'm so grateful for all the new beekeepers out there that are young, that are starting on rooftops, backyards in cities in New York. It's legal now in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Portland, the Opera House in Paris. All over the world, there are new beekeepers forming. And I'm very grateful for that because they will help, as we all are, helping grow flowers and things that are going to help bees be around a little bit longer.
Yeah, the magic of bees. Thank you, Taggart Siegel, our guest today. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Check it out. The Queen of the Sun, coming to theaters near you.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Springtime Rustani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then. And thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Bye-bye.